This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
In wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Man, Timothy, what's going on, my buddy?
Oh, same old, same old. You're getting the Saturday, shaking off the Saturdays. Got the long weekend to go ahead. Got All In happening, right? So that's a big deal. I'm enjoying my long weekend so far. Just getting started. How about you, Pete? How you been?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I mean, I just started watching the Jack Ryan series on Amazon, and that's so far really freaking good, so I suggest people check it out if you're a fan of that type of genre. I'm a Chicago Bear fan, and we just made a blockbuster trade to get Khalil Mack from Oakland, who's a game changer, who we were a top 10 defense last year. That could put us over the edge of the top five defense this year. Definitely going to put a lot more pressure on the quarterback. So it's a good thing, because also I heard the Packers are interested. So whenever you can keep a game changer like that away from a division rival, and you be able to bring him into your camp, that's just much better. And hell, and then on Sunday, tomorrow, I have Inspire Pro Wrestling. Really good show. We have Ricky Starks versus Shane Strickland. We have MGF versus ACH. We have PCO versus Dirty Andy Dalton. Those are the three big matches, and I'm really excited about all three. There's a really good four-way with I could be a show stealer with Rick Andrews, Aaron Solo, Cody Lane, and one other guy. I can just off the top of my head, maybe it was Cam Cole, maybe, or I can't remember. It's driving me nuts who it is. But they've actually sold the most tickets they've ever sold to a show. So I think some of that has to do with old PCO. But yeah, who else is in this thing? It's Jacobs, Ashton Jacobs. We have Bruno versus Slade in a street fight. Ethan Price versus Jay Sirius should be fun. They have a 8-man tag team thing, so that's, you know, not my thing. But then we have Delilah Doom versus Cam Cole. So man, I'm hoping to have high hopes, and I'll have a report back the following week, next week, about it. Man, what do you got going on wrestling-wise or anything?
Wrestling-wise, I got Bola in like 2 weeks, right? Which is a big deal, I guess. They just announced some changes on that due to Travis Banks being injured and switched out. He's being replaced by Sammy Guevara, which is an interesting switch. But his match and the booking got moved around, which is interesting. The night one had Ilya Dragunov and Shingo Takagi as a tag team. I believe they still are tagging, but now they're facing off against each other the following night, as opposed to, I think it was going to be Travis Banks versus Shingo. Now it's Ilya. So that'll be interesting to see what happens on the first night with them as partners, see how that plays into them wrestling the second night. Sammy's now in there with a match against Jonah Rock, which feels like a match that could be in some ways a spiritual successor to his match with Jeff Cobb from last year, which was wrestled as more of a sprint. I think the Jonah match might be slowed down quite a bit, but I think we could see Sammy pinballing for a big Samoan within the same vein of being a pretty good style match. You mentioned ACH. He just had a bit of a controversial booking that happened last night. I don't know if you heard about it.
You
want to hear a little spoiler in it, but he's been in the middle of what some people are saying is the best title run, the best heavyweight champion of any company in wrestling right now, best babyface at least, in AAW, and they had him drop his title to Brody King, which I think some people felt like was maybe a little bit too soon to be giving your top title to Brody King. People think he's not quite there yet. See how that plays into AAW showing up in Texas here pretty soon with King.
Yeah, that might be just a way of ACH getting the title back and Austin.
At home. Yeah, that would make sense. He comes back against the big monster who, I mean, Brody King's been in Texas a couple times, right? He's got a little bit of a rip there. So I think he's a monster that the people can get behind, and then the hometown boy can take the title back. So I see that working out pretty well.
And I have my tickets to that show. So.
Yeah, which seems like it'll be a fun show to check out for sure. And, I mean, the show that it was Inspire that you're going to tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that card, I remember looking it over. It definitely looks like one that can that could definitely be a standout for the year. There's a lot of good matches on there.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. You catch anything from All In yesterday?
I did not. Have not had a chance. Don't know if I'll be going out of my way to check out much, except for maybe a couple matches from the actual show itself.
Okay.
What about you? Did you check anything out?
No, I'm not. You know, I'm not a podcast guy that's pretty much all they really had. I mean, I saw some GIFs and stuff. But, you know, I'm excited to see where this goes and see... it's really exciting what's happening right now, but I want to be real. I want to see what happens. Step one, you know, Vince Russo was always fantastic in booking when it came to a step one and catching your attention, but he just did not know how to tell a story in between and then, or get to the payoff. That was his main problem in WCW. Was he could come up with a great opening act where it just sounded great on paper, but he just didn't know how to pay it off or time it right or what have you. So I'm curious on what step number two is going to be after this, and if we can get a repeat. Who knows? But I'm curious on where the NWA lines out of this, if this gets Cody, put the belt on Cody and maybe make the NWA belt mean something. I just have a lot of curiosities on coming out of the show and stuff like that. Anything else you want to hit on before we go?
No, nothing else really for me that was too exciting in the past week, other than just, the wrestling that we watched for the show.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, man. Well, we open up with MLW Fusion Episode 19. And we kind of get a recap of last week's angle, which we didn't cover because of everything going on. And the angle looked pretty cool, actually. What do you think?
Yeah, I actually did end up. I watched the episode back also, but the fight club, the fight training. I did watch, I watched that episode just to be, so I'd have like a concept of what's going on, not be completely out of the loop. The angle was done really well. I thought it was interesting that they had the last minute switch having Pero take over when people were expected Tagar. Lawler looked great, you know, fighting against Pero, which I thought they did pretty good with that. And then the post-match, the blood was maybe a little cheesy with Seth Precizelli laying there, but I thought that they saved it with the post-match Twitter promo from Filthy. I thought that he did a really good job calling him out and coming across real and pissed off.
I agree with you on that. Then we got Simon Gotch versus Freddie Yehi versus Dirty Blondes. This angle is kind of weird. It's like, because at first, I didn't think anybody's role has been really defined really well in this feud, where clearly now Lawler and Team Filthy is the babyface, but they're acting like assholes the whole entire time during the feud. Finally, though, they look like they're now the actual babyfaces of the feud. Is it hard? I really think they kind of fumbled, and finally they got it over, but I think they fumbled for a while on this feud. What do you think?
Yeah, and they probably should have just cut bait on it instead of continuing on. You even got, the chair interference, and I know they're kind of doing the Eddie Guerrero thing. He throws the chair to Pero to make it look like he did it or whatever, so that they don't get the DQ, but they're still, they're cheating and they're doing this bullshit, so it's, after you had the kind of mix-ups in the beginning and then you're doing that to kind of play off of the, their kind of underhanded baby faces. I think it's all just muddied the waters, and I still am excited for more you know, Lawler versus Hagar matches and that going on. But the background on the stuff is getting difficult. And then, you know, you've also got the big kind of stuff brewing with the War Games match too. So it just feels like too much faction warfare right now.
Yeah, this show is clearly geared towards building up War Games. I thought they did a good job with that. The whole muddling the waters. At first, you felt like, you know, these guys are kind of dicks, and they're picking on this old man and Robert, you know, and the Colonel. But now it's like the switch sides. Now they're being asked. Now they're kind of being the antagonists, and Filthy and Team Filthy is now reacting to them. So yeah, they've just, I don't know. It's just like it seems. It's hard when there's not. I mean, like, Simon Gotch is an unlikable bit. The most likable guy in the whole entire group is Freddie AI. And it's just tough. And I mean, Lawler, that was a good promo. And you can get behind Lawler as a babyface easily. But they just got to position him a little better as a babyface. What do you think of this match with Gotch and the AI versus the Dirty Blondes?
Yeah, I liked the match fine. It didn't feel like it had any teeth for me just because of everything else that's swirling around it. I didn't get into it as much. And it's teams that I think I could get into. I think Simon Gotch also I think he's got a natural kind of heel style to a lot of what he's doing. So that doesn't work. Yehai can go both ways, but he's been better as a kind of a roughneck and even so much like a grumpy veteran we talked about during SCI. So them being the babyface, the only guy in the group who I think can really pull off this babyface thing is Lawler, and I almost would predict like a Simon Gotch turning on him, you know what I mean, and having Lawler on his own I think would almost make more sense here coming up soon. But yeah, we'll see where they go with that. The match itself is fine, but I just expect more from both these teams, especially Dirty Blondes. I mean, I've seen them have really good matches, and they're just kind of, this match is just kind of there.
Yeah, it's like they don't really want to push them hard where they push them, but they always lose. I did like the face shine here, though the cutoff could have been much more creative. The Blonde secondary heat segment was much better, but it was just kind of there. Then you get ACH and Swan. I mean, I don't understand what the fuck they're doing. What are they doing outside? I mean, obviously entering the building, but were they just acting like immature people?
Yeah, I know. They're just kind of fucking around. There's nothing. There's a lot of that on this show, though, where you just don't have any understanding of what's going on. Stuff is going from thing to thing to thing.
Yeah, I felt like a segment we didn't need. Then we get this Tommy Dreamer interview, and I thought they did a really good job. It was a good promo that borderlined on excellent, where it might have been one of Tommy Dreamer's better ones, one of his top 10 promos. But Tommy Dreamer is not a great promo to begin with. I mean, it's a good, solid promo, don't get me wrong. But that's the thing, is you bring him in, and the dude, bottom line is, he was only a star in ECW ever, or House of Hardcore. You know, it's just, so it's hard to take him and look at him seriously as this mega star when he hasn't really been a star anywhere else but ECW. And so you gotta, turn the clock back freaking 20 years. And that place went out of business in 2002 or whatever it was. I don't even think Johnny P., recognizes Tommy Dreamer as a star anymore. I mean, the time has passed. So it works for me. If I thought Dreamer had a little bit more charisma, and maybe I just don't buy into this ECW. I was never a huge ECW guy, so maybe I don't buy into the mythos of it. So maybe if I was an ECW guy, maybe I might buy into this a little bit more or a lot more. But either way, I thought it was a well-executed promo, and I liked how he hit on some key history notes and past, but yeah, but it's him that just, you know, it's just like, okay, Tommy Dreamer, of course. What do you think?
Yeah, I think pretty solid there. Good promo, like you said, but I think I agree with basically everything else you said. Tommy, I mean, I get where you're coming from, that he was never, I don't know how to put it. He's not a great orator. He doesn't have promos that are memorable for the substance, but I do think that he had charisma, and he's always had this same level of natural ability of getting the crowd, getting people into what he's talking about. Okay. Even in ECW, as someone who was kind of an ECW person at a time, you know, I was the right age for it when it was really kind of hitting heavy. So to me, like, this was, I wouldn't say it was not a good promo for him, but it was very similar to the style of his promos that he always had. I think he just has gotten better as he's gotten older, obviously, because he does say things that actually stand out and mean something. And before, it was kind of just more and more of the same shtick. I'm hardcore, fuck, hit myself in the head with stuff, bleed, oh, I'm going to kick your ass, blood, guts. This had, like, some teeth to it and actually a bite to, like, something that you could get invested in more.
Yeah, and I thought it was the best promo, and because, like, we had, like, four different guys cutting War Games promos tonight, and I thought Dreamers was by far the best. I thought he smoked Callahan, smoked Abyss. I can't remember who else was on there, but there was a... Do you remember who all else cut War Game promo?
There was the beginning of a promo that got broken up with the whole team, with, like, Strickland and Barrington Hughes in that, and I mean, that doesn't really count. Abyss's promo, I mean, I think when you said Tommy Dreamer has never been a good promo, I personally think Abyss has never been a good promo. People go gaga for the character stuff that he did in TNA, where he was playing his own twin brother and all this, but I've never thought that he was a good promo, honestly. He's much better off with a manager like a James Mitchell type or someone with him.
I agree with you there. I've never been a big Abyss guy. He comes out to San Antonio all the time, and I never made the drive out there to see him. I mean, he's absolutely nothing to me. And then we get this, like, Pitbull-Martinez match, which is kind of like a squash, huh?
Yeah, and he's a guy that I mentioned. He was actually on both MLW and ROH that we reviewed in the same week a little while back, or maybe he was episode back-to-back or whatever, but now it looks like MLW is going to feature him, so...
And it looks like a different look, huh? Because it looks like... Yeah. Okay, right?
Yeah, they polished him up. His stuff is looking better. Seems like someone they could do something with. He's almost... He's got a little bit of that Homicide Rottweiler swagger that they could play off of, especially with Loki here in the company already. Maybe someone who could take him under his wing. The guy he's going up against looked like a chunkier version of Sharkbait, I think was the guy. He was a jobber, like a mid-level jobber to the stars type. And was it NWL we used to watch? Or maybe it was Reality of Wrestling. It was one of the two, but kind of had that same thing. He's wearing the gi pants and the shirtless, kind of flabby. But this guy was even a little bit bigger than Sharkbait was.
Yeah, and then they pretty much go right into the main event, huh?
Yeah, the main event tag, which is
of Lucha Brothers versus ACH and Rich Swann. I thought this might have been the best match. I think this was the best match we've seen on MLW television by far. I'd put this up as one of the best sprints we've seen all year. I thought this thing was tremendous. And I usually, the whole tag psychology bothers me. But you know what? When I have a Lucha team in there, I'm a little bit more lax because I feel like that's part of their rules where it's go-go stuff. But my God, I thought this was a legit 4.5-star match. I was like, holy shit, on Phoenix's dive early on. It's on. Lucha Brothers having a big time shine. Crowd is just on fire into everything. ACH's comeback was pretty freaking amazing. So many big moves. Total action. Yeah, I really think it was one of the best sprints of the year when it comes to all action, big dives. And just a wow factor, and the Lucha Brothers, man, they just are a great, great tag team, and I think ACH and Swann are really good together too. Don't get me wrong, but this was definitely the Lucha Brothers match and their style. And I mean, I don't know how much longer they have on. And then if you hear the rumors, they're WWE bound, stamped and ready to go sometime next year. And I think they'll be an asset to wherever they want to put them if they give them a push. They're that fucking talented. And you know what? They might bring him, those two in it, and Ray in as a faction together type of thing to keep the work off Ray's leg and stuff where he doesn't have to do long singles matches except for on really big shows and stuff. What do you think of the match, man?
Yeah, hopefully that's why they put the Shield back together, right? Get them heated up so that Rey and the Lucha Brothers can feud with them. That would be interesting kind of turn of events there. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. When this match was going on, I was really, really impressed, especially because I have not given a shit about Rich Swann and since he left WWE really at all. And even then, it was like not since the tag team. I mean, we talked about it a million times. Not since the tag team with No Way Jose did he really seem like he mattered. But ACH is, you know, he's really good tag team partner here for him. The Lucha Brothers, obviously fantastic in everything they do. There's some stuff that's a little bit much for me. I mean, ACH is all bandaged up and they're talking about the thigh bandage, even on commentary, mentioning it and him talking about the injury. And then he's doing stuff like, you know, deadlifting both guys on his shoulders and throwing one of them onto the other. So stuff like that, where you're kind of like, well, you know, but that's... It's not terrible because there hasn't been legwork and they really didn't tell that story in the match, but it is kind of like, well, why are you bandaged up? Why is the commentary talking about your leg being hurt or whatever and you're not really showing it in any way in your wrestling? That doesn't hurt the match very much for me, though, honestly.
I can see where you're coming from on that completely. That was totally not a narrative being told in the match at all. Yeah, there wasn't anything like that where you got to see ACH doing a sell job because, yeah, it was nothing. It was all about the moves.
Yeah, and the Lucha Bros, I mean, they when it comes to moves matches, these guys are phenomenal. I talked about how I'm happy that the Rascals have the tag belts in PWG because they feel like a new version of the Young Bucks. But, I mean, the Lucha Brothers were that connection between the two in some ways. When they had the tag belts, they felt like also like new school Young Bucks. They've got so many cool spots. Phoenix, obviously, is the my preferred member of the team. But, when he hits his big spots and those crazy kicks and all that stuff in here, it's great, even though the reason why he stands out to me is his selling and all that stuff, like that part of him. Still, I mean, when it's spot time, the guy can fucking go. Obviously, he's bringing it here.
Thing about Phoenix, the dude can do a lot of stuff. He can do a lot of, he can do a big sprint move, you know. Or he could be the guy who gets his ass kicked by the monster and can just sell and sell and sell death. And then he has great spots for comebacks where, you know, the dude has a lot of different looks that he can give you.
Yeah, I mean, he's had good matches with Ospreay. He also had a terrible match with Ospreay that we talked about. So he can do the kind of flyer versus flyer thing that I think a lot of people can't do. He can do that. Like you said, he can bump and sell. The match with Sabre from PWG I thought was fantastic. I actually think it's overlooked how much better his match with Sabre was than his brother's Pentagon's match. I mean, I think that match had the aura and everyone was going crazy for it because both guys were so over at the time. But to me, the Phoenix match was so much better.
I think Phoenix was a much better worker than Pentagon. Yeah. And Pentagon gets by a lot. Not that he's lazy, but he gets by a lot with the charisma. I think Phoenix has enough charisma. But, I mean, definitely Pentagon has more. But Phoenix smokes him all around. To different avenues of how to work a match.
Right. And the interesting thing between the two is that Phoenix is the one here. I mean, he grabs the mic. He can speak English much better than Pentagon can. He's, you know, kind of playing up to the crowd and all this. But I really find that Phoenix, to me, seems to get over more in a crowd with some kind of Hispanic or Latino tinge to it. Places like Mexico, South America, or Southern California, you know, even Northern California now, you know, but the Chicago, places like that where there's a good, you know, Latino demographic, whereas Phoenix, I think, gets over everywhere. You see him over in, you know, New York, East Coast, where it's, I mean, there's still, you know, some people there, but you know what I mean? It doesn't have that same amount. So it's interesting that way because we'll see how they do in WWE. I mean, both guys obviously did well in Europe, but they were in a tag team and we didn't really ever see them doing singles when they're in Europe. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, that kind of dynamic plays in WWE, which guy kind of ends up being the one who gets more over. Because up until this point, Phoenix has been the guy, but the way that the crowds are, we'll talk about it when we get into NXT, but like the NXT crowd now to me screams like, you know, they want the work rate. And they talk about, I've been talking about how the best, you know, in-ring roster that NXT's ever had now, and the crowd eats it up. So will they get as behind Pentagon just because of his charisma and his taking it easy style in the ring, or will it be Phoenix because he's the one who stands out with the work? We'll see what happens, you know? That's going to be a really interesting situation.
That is interesting. And And that's the thing about this NXT. I mean, it's so deep where you could, a guy can get injured and they can just, here, here's a Donovan Dijak to replace him. Oh, here's a, you know, that's how loaded they are right now for Bear. Oh, here, if you want to put Matt Riddle on TV now. You know, they're just loaded right now. With the cupboards are full, if you will. Yeah. What do you think? Usually this has got to be one of their best shows they've done. I mean, because I really liked how they were building up the War Games stuff. But you know what? It's the thing, War Games just seems so such a physical match. And I just don't know about all these skinny guys in a War Games
match. Wow, yeah. I mean, that's the Jimmy Havoc thing in spades. And pretty much most of the match kind of feels like that. But I think there's some guys who can stand out in there. I think Kota Brazil... Yeah. I think could bring something in there. We already talked about him and Sammy having that match. That was one of the first Sammy Callahan matches that I've liked in a long time. So yeah, I'm excited to see what Kota can do in there. Honestly, I think that he can almost fit a role like a Pillman, and I can't think of what year it was, but the year where Pillman 91. Almost killed himself. Or yeah, where Sid almost killed him.
91 in there, yep.
Yeah, where he can kind of be he's not one of the focal points of the match, per se. I mean, it's War Games, so everyone is, but he's not the guy who's the main issue, and he's even not one of the biggest stars, but in that match, just like I think Kota could do here, Pillman really shined and did a lot of cool stuff and like kind of was able to mix it up with everyone.
I mean, Kota could start it too, you know, and just taking an ass whooping.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, that kind of parallel, I think, is there for something that can stand out, because I think, you know, there's the other team. I mean, honestly, Sammy Callahan's team, to me, there's not really anybody that I'm super excited about. You know, I just really don't care that much about anybody on his team. But Shane Strickland I like, but we'll see what he does. I mean, he had that match with AR Fox in Lucha Underground that everyone went crazy for. The, you know, Weapons of Mass Destruction match or whatever. And he's got some CZW in him. So he definitely likes to go crazy in a you know, a weapon brawl kind of setting. So we'll see what they let him get away with here. Because even in Evolve, the kind of, I don't even know what the rule was. It might have been just like a Fight Without Honor type match or something against Riddle was just kind of nutty. So we'll see. Strickland might take it to him. But I get what you're saying, because nobody in it looks... like Arn Anderson, you know, there's not.
I mean, Tommy Dreamer, I guess, is the closest.
Right. But even he is.
None of them. I mean, they're all. There's some good workers there. Like Strickland's good. Callahan has had his moments. I mean, I'm not a fan of his right now. But that's the thing. It doesn't seem like there's that guy there who has such a great. I mean, it might be Strickland who might have the most. Who has the best psychology? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Who can put the blameless out together? A lot of guys who believe in excess, like Sammy Callahan and Tommy Dreamer in there. So I'm just curious if Riz is just going to boil down to a shitload of weapon shots, which I hate when they do that, cheapen the War Games gimmick. But we'll see what happens. On that note, you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
All right, sounds good, and then we'll come back. We'll talk some NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaySpeedNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySpeedNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpeedNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're back. We're looking at the current episode of NXT, and it opens up kind of like Regal claiming he's going to investigate the Black Attack. It sounded so funny when he said it. This week we start our investigation. This is stage one, and it gets pretty, I don't know, I don't want to say eye-rolling inducing as the show goes on, but it's like, ugh, I don't know. But I'd rather them do this behind. I don't think it's as entertaining as it sounded on paper. I think this could have worked like better behind the scenes with like references to. What did you think about the opening thing here?
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it with the video that just showing every possible person is a suspect, and then you're going. It's really turning into a farce, which, I mean, that's Regal's thing. You talk about it; he really loves like British comedy, British humor, and that's right up that alley. But I don't know if that's what we want for, you know, the main storyline of a wrestling company that you're trying to be serious. This is the top stuff.
It sounds like something WWE would do as opposed to NXT. And, like, I was like listening to, as I say, I'm not a big podcast guy, but I do go through YouTube here and there, and I'm, like, Stone Cold and Sean Waltman were talking about the differences. And the main difference is that NXT treats, it's still sports entertainment. It's some great audio and great all this, and they have the state-of-the-art production. But they still treat it like it's wrestling as opposed to sports entertainment. This whole angle feels a little too sports entertainment angle to me. What about you?
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. It definitely feels like, you know, Sheriff Stone Cold searching for who hit him with his car or whatever. Yeah. You know, I mean, it is a bit much for someone who likes wrestling to be presented as a sport.
And it's kind of funny. I think it was just on HBO, the Murder on the Orient Express, the updated one, debuted 2 or 3 weeks ago, just to go right in. Maybe a writer saw it and thought it was a great idea, because they always say the writers come up with something what they see on TV, and they're just timing here is pretty damn coincidental, but we'll see how it plays out. But right now, I'm not into it. Then we get this Gargano interview, and this is just really weird stuff. Then Regal's out, and Velveteen Dream is after a huge pop again. They have him totally miscast. They just need to pull the trigger and have him wrestle with the heels. But this whole segment was fucking weird. It was a long way to set up a match for next week, and here Gargano comes out hobbling on the crutch, and then turns out he really didn't need it. It was just to relieve pressure. That seemed just coincidence. It just seemed a little like, oh, okay, to get the big pop type of thing when he threw it at him. I thought overall it was a bad segment that was overly what's the word? Just overly just lacking. And it just had a lot of ideas that seemed good on paper. This seemed like Johnny Gargano from 4 years ago, 5 years ago, before he got to NXT, idea on paper that a lot of the indie guys might have thought it was cool, but it kind of sucked. What did you think?
Yeah, and it's funny because I was going to mention that. It's like I'm hearing people talking about this coming across, like, and then you talk about the stuff that he did in the match, and then the crutch being a, you know, oh, it was a trick. All of it coming across a little bit too. Gargano might be teasing heel switch, which you talk about Gargano before he got to NXT. Everyone remembers his beloved reign as DGUSA champion. Gargano was the best heel in indie wrestling, right? I mean, with his shitty ponytail and denim vest, everyone loved that guy back then. So hopefully, you know, that's what Gabe's planning to do, is redux that character that really basically drove Dragon Gate USA into the ground to the point where the company doesn't exist anymore, even though it got absolved into Evolve. It's just so funny to me to think people are talking about that. Everyone's overlooking that fact that the guy was a shitty heel. Like, he was not a good heel, even at the time. I mean, he was bad. And then the other part of it, one thing that I heard people talking about from the pay-per-view, everyone was so thought it was so cool, and then I don't know anyone put it, you know, two and two together or, you know, kind of noticed it, but I thought about it, and I thought, oh, maybe that's related. Velveteen Dream comes out on, you know, TakeOver, and he's wearing pants that say, "Call me up, Vince," and then a couple weeks later, it's announced that he's being sent to WWN. Does nobody think about that? That's not the call-up, you know? That's sending you back down. So I just kind of wonder what's going on with that, if it's not related in some way as a, oh, you think you're ready for the big time, well, you're going to show you what it's like, you know, all the dues that you kind of skipped by being on Tough Enough and getting signed to NXT. So we'll see what's going on with that. I mean, the matches he's got announced sound interesting to me. When I heard that he was going to WWN, the first match that I kind of fantasy booked in my head was with Darby Allin. I thought that would be good. Austin Theory is a guy who I'm high on that for some reason other people aren't, but I just kind of wonder what they're doing with both guys here, where it seems like another chance for Dream to be misaligned, maybe. But then also, what if it is a switch? And then it's like almost worse. I'd almost rather have Dream stay heel than have Gargano go heel, you know, right now.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you there. Totally with you there. Then we get a Dakota Kai versus Leah match. Again, a fun match. But I thought the finish came out of nowhere. Felt like they're building to something. And I thought both girls performed really well here. Dakota Kai has gotten over as a babyface, so I'm good. Leah, I thought, was really good in her role as kind of like the rich Indian type girl, you know, who daddy gives all their money to type thing. I enjoy her new character here. And sometimes, I mean, I haven't noticed this, but they have been doing this a lot more. As I really do like how they black out the crowd during these matches. I for some reason, I know they've been doing it for a long, long time, but it's something I've really noticed that it's again, it's a throwback to the 1980s wrestling where they never show the crowd on TV type of thing. And I kind of like that. So where people, they might not have, people might not be trying to steal the show if you can't see you. So maybe the maid show might need to do that. But I thought this was pretty cool stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I liked the match. I'm with you, too, on pretty much everything you said. I think Aaliyah pulls off the kind of my dreaded diva gimmick that I can't stand, which is, you know, the hot girl. She actually pulls it off pretty well because there's more to it, like you talked about. There's kind of a background, the stuff about kind of being spoiled and having the kind of that. You can kind of infer something else to it. So it's got more teeth and actually kind of I can buy into it. And then also she carries herself well for a gimmick like that. And then her style was, I thought, pretty good, even just real basic.
Yeah.
The body scissors, I thought, worked really well and looked good. Like, she was kind of attacking her. Obviously, Kai is very good at selling.
Good Dakota is as a baby face.
Yeah, I got to give a lot of credit to Dakota as the babyface for that, yeah, for making that work. But yeah, I think that was part of the why it did feel like it came out of nowhere is that I think that they're, I've talked about it before, but they try to focus on someone like Dakota because she's so good at selling that they just have her sell and then hit like a move and win. And I could use a little bit more because it didn't make any sense. She had a decent shine in the beginning with the double stomp and stuff like that, but realistically, that was it from her. And then she just wins with her move and it's over. And it did feel a little out of nowhere.
Anticlimactic. Like, she didn't earn her comeback almost in a way.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can kind of use that if they want to build that up as
her. Yeah.
If they want to build that as her thing, I can get into it, but she should probably be wrestling people that are above her and doing that than wrestling people who are below her, or at least in the pecking order. Seen below her and doing that.
That finish would work great against Baszler or something like that.
Right.
But it doesn't work working on. When you're above in the higher in the pecking order and it just doesn't work as well. I totally agree. Then we get the Regal back in interrogating. First we get the Velveteen Dream and then the Sons come in. Right? Is that like their
great way to debut Gunner here? I'm really happy that this is how they're debuting him.
Yeah, I like what I didn't. So they really haven't really shown these guys at all, right?
No, they're just. their house show. It's a house show gimmick, and then now it's just on TV. And fucking, you got a guy who, you know, just got, he's just signed, had a little bit going for him, and you know, we were watching him PWX and stuff, and then he's just sitting there with a, you know, failed tag team, ex-tag team champion, and some other random scrub that you've never even fucking seen before. What is, like, what is this?
I mean, I'm getting it as a Sons of Anarchy gimmick.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I was like, what? Who? I mean, I know them, but have we... And I don't, because there was so much shit going on in the damn video, you don't even remember them being there, but I guess they were. Yeah, that's a shitty way to get a debut. Holy crap.
And I mean, if you wanted to make this work, they should, the first video shouldn't have shown everybody. Like, you know, you do one video that shows maybe two people, and then you interview those two people, and then more video comes out, and more video comes out. You know what I mean? That's how you do something like this. Showing everything all up front, like you said, yeah, it gets confusing. Now I don't know. There is no focus.
Yeah, it became a Where's Waldo fucking painting. And then we come back, and holy shit, EC3 is laid out. But you know what? We see old Lars walking away. He doesn't look like he's hiding from the fact that he laid out EC3, and we'll find that out later. We get in, Nikki Cross gets interrogated. Bianca Belair comes in. This is fucking terrible, too. Now you're making Nikki Cross into a moron. Or that she's just almost like an... I call it Wild Girl. Or, like, they used to be this... an episode of Little House on the Prairie where this circus guy took in this kid and they called him Wild Boy. But because he never acclimated to real people, they just put him in a cage and made him Wild Boy. And that's what old Nikki Cross acted like. She acted like she was on, an extra on a Planet of the Apes movie. This was just really weird. And I guess, again, they're setting up a match between them. But, God, it was terrible. What about you?
Bianca was fine, but yeah, the Nikki Cross stuff is fucking atrocious. And especially for someone who was like my MVP of NXT last year, and now they've turned her into a fucking punchline. It's sad.
Fucking horrible. It's like she was already campy to begin with, but it was good. And now they turned her up to a 10, which is ridiculous. That led us into Lars Sullivan, because Raul Menendez was waiting for EC3, and Lars Sullivan squashes him. Whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Raul Mendoza, man. They don't do jack shit with this guy. But maybe when they do the NXT Mexico or something, that's when he'll matter, I guess. But yeah, I mean, fine way, I guess, to bring Lars back, just killing someone. But he was in such a high level that it feels like a step backwards for him, honestly.
Yeah, it does. It feels, yeah. It's like, it almost feels like, okay, they were about to call him up, and they almost, like, wrote him off, it felt like, and now he's back. I don't know. Ciampa interview, you know, good stuff from the guy, normal, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's so good that it you forget about, you know, it's just like, it's just at his level of fantastic. But it did, I think, unfortunately, this one reminded me a little bit of some of the twinges from when he was kind of trying to do the crazy, you know, schizophrenic gimmick in ROH, and some of his stuff that he was filming with his own camera backstage and stuff didn't quite hit as well. So I hope he's not completely reverting back. Obviously he's not completely reverting back, because this was much better than anything there, but it did give me a little reminder of that. And it does show that he has come a long way, but I just hope he doesn't backslide at all.
Yeah. Then we got Keith Lee versus Luke Menace.
I thought had to be a fucking rib, because the guy's got, you know, red splatters all over his crotch, and his last name is Menzies.
Yeah, okay, Menzies, okay. Yeah, again, Keith Lee over in a power squash. But it was all right. You know, they're just waiting until Keith Lee's ready for his first feud. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this was probably a good use for this guy, even though, you know, I never heard of him, because he looks the part. And he could, you know, base somewhat for a guy the size of Keith without getting hurt, like some of the other jobbers that they probably would try to put him in there with. But yeah, just getting Keith, I guess, shined up until you're ready to actually do something with him.
I wonder what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, that's a good question. It seems like he's in stasis, and I don't know what the plan would be.
It's like they wanted to sign him, but now they don't know exactly what to do with him. I mean, it's early, so we'll see. There's no rush. Then we get Ricochet and Dunn versus the Undisputed Era, but this one is Roddy Strong and Adam Cole here. What do you think of the match?
Good stuff. It plays into, again, what I was talking about. I liked a lot of the setup with the, you know, and they've got such a history. It's so funny. Like, even just a couple years ago, I would never, these guys didn't really have interactions with each other, and I would not expect that they would be, you know, someone who has backstory and history that they're able to play off of, but like Strong and Dunn, and they have great chemistry with each other. And on top of just being good wrestlers, NXT has now found a way to do a really good job of building up this lore where, like, they mention it. These guys were tag team partners in the Dusty Road Classic, and Roddy turned his back on Pete. So now you've got that you can always, you know, kind of talk about when they interact with each other. And then, of course, they can just have lights out wrestling matches. Then you got, you know, the stuff that's going on with Ricochet and Cole right now. So obviously you got that story that you can play off of too. And just great action.
Don't forget about you also have that other in play of Ricochet and Dunn, where you have the North American belt title versus the UK, you know, two different
right. Planets. Yeah. So it's just NXT is this great mix right now of all these fantastic workers. And also really cool stories and backstories and history that's coming. And just these four guys all feel like they're the top of the heap, really, you know, like the champion is Gargano and Ciampa and all that, and the deep storyline that's going on with those two. But these guys are, again, I've talked about it multiple times. It's like prime top level athletes at the peak of their powers and just fucking killing it. Love the kind of isolation of Ricochet by Undisputed Era. Really great selling from Ricochet there, and just diabolical bullshit. Love the way that Undisputed Era always mix in a little underhandedness, even when they don't need to. I mean, they start off their heat always with a little, some kind of diversion, some kind of numbers game, some kind of bullshit, and then they'll work over someone like they do here with Ricochet and still take little shortcuts that, you know, you feel like they don't need to, you know, but it's such a great thing. It just sucks that they can't actually be fucking heels. Like, they're such good heels that aren't heels, and it does get annoying because the crowd doesn't react. They're treated like baby faces by everyone, you know, and it just, that kind of sucks. Pete?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I hate that. It really, I don't mind it, you know. I've become to, you know, yeah, a lot of these reactions, it's like, dude, they're working hard to get the heel reaction. Fucking give it to them. Fuck.
Yeah, and there's, like I said, they're so good. I mean, they're really good heels. They're a great heel tag team. I mean,
yeah,
honestly.
Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, I'm buddies with Kane Justice and stuff, and but I'm able to fucking, I go into a wrestling show like it's a movie to me, where I want to be. I'm able to. If you do a good enough job, I'm able to buy into it. I don't remember. I won't. I know. Yeah, Kane and I are buddies, but Kane and I, the wrestling guy, are not buddies. And I'm able to fucking boo him and shit talk him or what have you. I think Rick, you know, as Ric Flair, when he used to show up, I used to love the guy. But God, he'd make me want to hate him when I'd see him live and stuff. It's just those. It's like I understand. I don't know how people don't. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a different type of fan, but it's just like I'm able to. I know what I'm watching is a work, and I know it's make believe in a way, and I know it's storyline dictated, but I know that it's predetermined. But if you do a good enough job, and they are doing a good enough job, where you should get people to boo you.
Yeah.
But everyone I know, I guess people don't go in like that, like how I view it, I guess, maybe.
No, I guess not. But yeah, I loved all that work on Ricochet. Like I said, the heat from Undisputed Era is great. Then the hot tag from Dunn is fantastic. And again, playing up with the interactions with him and Roddy there, the guys, I mean, those two are fucking amazing together. Like the counters and the back and forth and the spots, and they're both just like well-oiled machines. I mean, in such great, you know, condition, with Alto being just so fast. And yeah, so that was awesome for the finish. And then, you know, kind of, They get the cheap win, which we were talking about a couple of weeks, where they were giving away wins that felt like they could have figured out a way to get away cheap. So now I think they've earned a little leeway where they can do some kind of cheap wins like this. Even though it's an actual finish, it still felt like unfair and can get the crowd a little bit pissed off and actually get some heat. And it just goes to show, man, like, if you don't overdo one thing or the other, and you just kind of do matches that have finishes and they just end, then you can actually still get heat with basic stuff. Even just a little regular ass heel finish like this actually can get some heat for building forward on the storyline. You get the War Raiders coming out, but you know, I say build some heat, and then we still talk about the fact that, you know, no one in the fucking crowd is going to boo the Undisputed Era, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, it just, to me, watching the show, I appreciate it because it's done super well. The booking's done really well. The heel work's done really well. But it just, yeah, again, it just sucks that the crowd. I feel like we were talking about him earlier off air a little bit, but I'm feeling a little bit like I'm finally agreeing with Parv here that modern wrestling crowds are what ruining wrestling.
You never hear me say both these guys. You'll never see me do that, you'll never hear me say he's just awesome and I had a show. I'm a firm believer in fucking, they're doing their job right. I mean, fuck yeah, it starts fucking up the dynamic of the heat, man. And I mean, it's been ongoing in the WWF for fucking years when their number one babyface, John Cena, gets booed out a lot. Roman Reigns gets booed out, and now it's here. You know, it's like, fuck, this is really good stuff. I mean, I thought it was a 3 3/4 star match. He had a good shine. Absolutely love the blind tag for the Undisputed Era to get heat, like any good fucking heel team should do. Dunn gets a hot tag, beats the crap out of him. Nice way. I love the finish where there's a nice way also to tease Ricochet and Dunn because they're both the North American and the UK champion. That finish causes friction. You have War Raiders coming out because that story takes center stage with Undisputed Era because they'll obviously going to be the next challengers for the belt or... Well, it might be building up a War Games match. Who knows? But all that stuff is on the table, so it makes it interesting. It was booked fantastically, except for, you know, Undisputed Era not getting booed on blind tags and then doing chicken shit things and being cowards and taking powders and running away. I can't even imagine if I watched the Midnight Express and watching them get baby face reactions most of the time, which it didn't happen and stuff. So God bless you, Parv. On that note, why don't we take a break and then we'll talk some back Black Label Pro.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. We're talking Black Label Pro National. What is SlamCon Vacation? You know, they bring in a lot of talent to these Black Label Pro shows, you know, and I like a lot of the matches on the show, but it just seems like they don't grasp the idea of the flow of the show, or it doesn't seem like there's a thought process behind on how they're laying out the matches, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it feels like we got really spoiled for a little bit.
Yeah, with Action and SCI?
I mean, in general, I think just in indie wrestling in general, I think that it was something that Meltzer had talked about a little bit, where it used to be a lot more difficult for like guys from Mexico and Japan and America to all just like get together and then have great matches. And then it was turning into that where it felt like on the indies, so many guys were so good that they could just like never have met each other, never wrestled before, never talk, and then just come together and have great matches. And I think that the booking in Black Label Pro doesn't take that into account and sometimes just throws people together who maybe aren't ready or don't have that familiarity with each other to have really good matches. And then, yeah, like you talk about SCI and all these other places where they do pull it off, where maybe they're putting a little bit more thought into it, or, you know, they just have a little bit higher caliber talent. And it shows. And I think that it's something that maybe is getting overlooked in some places, and that's why it's kind of seeming to go the other way now.
I think it's the difference between really good shows and just a show. And like, I mean, honestly, I mean, Action was something. Russell Action is a show that sticks out to me. SCI, CWF used to be really good at doing laying a card out. But here, yeah, we just had I think I would open the show. I didn't put any real thought in this, but I think I would have opened up the show with the Space Against versus No Consequences. I think I would have then followed up with a singles match. I think I would have gone with Josh Briggs and Kobe Durst.
Yeah.
I then would have came back with maybe that brawl with the tag match brawl, the Production versus General Order 24. Then I think I would have calmed it down and gone with a match of Tom Lawler versus C.W. Anderson. Then I think I would have gone with Percy Davis and Shane Mercer versus Coon Garnini. Then I would have followed that up with Mance Warner and Alley Cat. And then I think I would have gone the opening match where we got the three-way with Guevara, Monix and Gringo Loco. And then I would have gone Darby, PCO, and then Janela and D'Lo. Well, how would you have put the card together?
Yeah, on the fly, very similar to what you're saying, except for I think that because of the company and then also because of what they should be doing, I think that they should be continuing to build their lineage as for their championship. So I think that no matter what match he's in, and even this match here, I think Tom Lawler should be featured on the top of the card. So have the Tom Lawler true. Match in the semi-main.
Champion here. No, you're right. He should. You're right.
Because I think that one thing that happens is a company, you don't even think about it because it's in your rear view, but when you start treating a former champion like he's a second, third match guy, and his match isn't important, then it retroactively devalues your title. And so I take a guy who's a former champion and he's always going to be in my, you know, semi-main event or at least be a featured matchup, at least for a while, you know?
That's fair.
So, yeah.
But I think my order is better than what they gave us here.
Oh, 100%. So I think, yeah, I think the only thing I would switch is Darby and Lawler, like you said, even if it is with C.W. Anderson, just to kind of play off of that. And I think C.W. Anderson has some lineage and all that. But I think otherwise, I
W's match is the best match on the show, so let me also say that. It just feels like there's like no rhyme or reason of how it's laid out, and that was just me right now spitballing it within 10 seconds, and it felt like, I mean, yeah, maybe I'm it's easy in hindsight to see what we got here, but God, yeah, there was a lot of you know. But hey, let's start off.
It felt like they're trying to book it like a 2014-2015 PWG show, but you don't have the same level of talent.
Right. I agree there. Opening match, Gringo Loco, Pat Mannix, Sammy Guevara. I mean, it was a bunch of moves. I didn't really pick up on a big story here, but I was entertained nonetheless. I gave it 2 3/4. I wasn't blown away by it. But I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, my turn, your turn. Okay, you're going to sit out for a bit. Okay, now, you know, but typical kind of like a, you know, three-way mess where they had a bunch of big moves in it. What did you think?
I thought that there was way too much, like, aggressive hand-holding where it's like the start of an Irish whip is a guy, like, direction, like, having to move the other guy around in a way while he's just holding his wrist and kind of... It's just super business exposing. This is one where I'm talking about these guys have no experience with each other. They're trying to do a lot of stuff, and they're not really able to pull it off. Sammy, we've seen Sammy, and I think Sammy's very good, but I think in a setting like this, he did not get a chance to show why he's good. He's trying to keep up with two other guys that he doesn't know, and he has probably not really wrestled before. There's a lot of awkwardness, a lot of sloppiness, a lot of stuff that was really business exposing. Didn't happen here, but it was. I watched a match. I think it was actually on the Lost in New York match with Gringo Loco, and the commentary on there is talking about his Ace of Base nickname, and it's. I mean, talk about business exposing. Calling him the Ace of Base is fucking stupid. And on that show, they were trying. One of the commentators was like, "Oh, you know, why is he called that?" Trying to get him to explain it, and it's like, you have to basically completely expose kayfabe to explain why he's the Ace of Base, because you're saying he's really good at helping other people do high flying moves is his nickname. Can you fucking imagine? Yeah, can you fucking imagine? It's wild. So yeah, I thought that this was super sloppy. Mannix looked good when he was doing some striking, but some of his flying, I mean, he was doing that kind of, oh fuck, I jumped too far, and then you're, it's like you have to tone something down because you realize that you're not going to like hit it the way that you want to because you jumped way too far. So then it just looks like why did he hold that punch back? Why did he hold that forearm back? Why did he, you know, so just a lot of stuff like that was driving me a little bit crazy. I gave the match 2 stars. So yeah, I was not into it.
Okay. What do you think of Percy Davis, Shane Mercer versus Koo and Guarini?
The opening with Percy Davis and Ark Williams, I couldn't tell what was going on, if they were supposed to be arguing or, you know, whatever that was. So that threw me off a little bit. Then you get into the match. Percy Davis, to me, screams like a comedy guy. And so it's like, this, I think, was supposed to be serious. Dom and Coot.
Sesame Street. What, one of these things don't belong, you know?
Yeah. Shane Mercer's good for what he does. He's kind of like that prototype. He's basically like early John Cena ripoff, except for he doesn't have the height, really. But he's got the... He's jacked, obviously. And he could do more high-flying than Cena ever could. But yeah, I thought that Koo and Dom looked fucking fantastic. And that's a dream team if there ever was one for myself. I love both guys, and I think that they're good as a team. Their spots and their stuff really carried the match for me. Their double teams and their kind of coercion working together. But the other team felt like it was a complete mismatch. Ark Williams, I like, she's kind of developing her own style. Seen her before. I think it was on the Making Towns Classic. She was real generic. But now she's kind of standing out as her own thing. So we'll see where that goes. So yeah, for me, this match, I give it 2.5 stars, really, just for the Dom Kevin Koo tag team. It really was kind of having a match on their own was what got the 2 stars. Really, the other team did really very little for me.
Yeah, I couldn't get into this match. I gave it a star and 3/4. It was like, yeah, the whole Percy Davis thing, and it's like, what? And yeah, I just couldn't get into it. It felt really cold. Then we get Filthy Lawler versus C.W. Anderson. I really like the feeling out process here. Lawler keeps on continuing to impress me. Like, I mean, he can be a top guy anywhere at this point. Anderson seems really measured here in a good way. I love that at this one point, CW throws a beautiful punch. Great near fall on the Anderson spine buster. Really strong match. I mean, they really laid out a great match, had a good story here. I loved how they meshed their styles really well together with CW as the traditional pro wrestler and Tom Lawler doing pro wrestling spots, but also mixing in his MMA background. Good stuff. 3.5-star match. And I might even be lowballing it. I mean, I really, really liked it. And Lawler, man, yeah, he's just he's a special cat right now. What do you think of the match?
Yeah, you're definitely lowballing it. I gave it 3.75, so you should be ashamed of me. No, it's just slightly above. But yeah, I mean, Lawler, right here, it just shows you talk about it. And I think they mentioned it. I don't know if they mentioned it on commentary or not, but he's wearing I think it was because he's wearing the Pride gear. And I think at this point he was already fired by UFC officially, but... You know, then he goes out, and it's almost perfect timing. He goes out and has this match where he shows off his pro wrestling side. You know, he's not the UFC fighter anymore. He's a wrestler, and he's a really good fucking wrestler. The guy can get over anywhere. He is special. I mean, he's got athleticism, charisma, wrestling IQ. He's really got it all, and he can talk in MLW. We talked about his promo his promo on MLW this week was probably the best. I would say just promo in general. Tommy Dreamer's promo could give him a run for the money, but I mean, realistically, Tommy's been doing it for how fucking long, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, the guy is that's why I said, if I'm putting the card together, I'm putting him at the top of the card, just not in the main event necessarily, but at the top of the show, just because he's should be treated as important to the company, especially being a former champion, as well as just being really fucking good. CW Anderson. Yeah. CW Anderson. I mean, he's still got his spots. And that just, again, shows, I mean, Lawler, he's an old-school wrestler. He knows how to work around a guy who's got some spots that look good. CW Anderson's not bad. We've seen him have good matches recently. He's not washed up or bad or old or anything like that. But
one thing, he has good psychology, good timing. He's a believable asshole. Throws a great punch. So there's a lot of things he does very well. When you have a freak of an athlete like Lawler, who also has a pretty good mind for this business, and you got to say, I mean, obviously, I think Anderson had a lot to do with this in the back. They laid out a really good match between the two of them.
Yeah, they both. I mean, yeah, they took advantage of what both guys do well, which for Lawler just seems to tend to be everything. The guy can do it all, and then they also And something that's overlooked, I mean, it was a joke that me and a good friend of mine, Manning, used to make at PWG constantly, where it's like, you know, kind of Enochism, which is all the rage now, but the idea of a legitimate background being the end-all be-all and the most important thing. It's like you can't take a wrestler seriously if they don't have legitimate background, but Lawler has legitimate background, and it does make his stuff feel like it means more. No matter how fake wrestling gets, there's something about someone who's legit that you just buy into a little bit more.
Riddle had it. I mean, Brock had it, even though he wasn't working. A couple years ago, Brock was having really great matches. But even now, you still believed in him. I mean, hell, even that Mania feud 2 years ago, people believed him in fucking Goldberg, that feud. Based on Aura. I mean, you don't forget that. Do you think they'll rename it Tom Lawler's Bloodsport next year at Mania?
Hey, that's not a bad idea. I mean... He can easily slide right into a lot of the role of Matt Riddle in a lot of places, honestly.
Yeah.
And
I think he can have a bigger, better aura than Riddle, because Riddle has that nice guy type of thing going for him, where Filthy could be a little bit more edgier. He could be a little bit more edgier.
He could be an actual heel, too, which I think Riddle, I don't know if I ever saw Riddle.
And I have a point, yeah. No way. Not when you show him his personality. Yeah, no fucking way. Riddle could be a heel, but he'd need a fucking Paul Heyman to fucking turn him heel. Or that type of manager. What do you think of Mansoor versus Alley Cat under Mansoor rules?
I liked it, but again, it was the same problem that we've been having with Alley Cat, is that she needs to pick a fucking lane. Mance is... He also has a little bit of himself, but I feel like it's not as glaring, where he's a good brawler, but he also plays comedy. But I kind of buy into him more, I guess, just because he's not playing that he's a fucking cat. I guess it's probably why. And that he is playing a character too. He's playing a gimmick too, kind of, right? I mean, I don't know him personally. People can argue that it's the real him or whatever, but he's playing, you know, kind of a mid-Atlantic sleazeball guy who's, you know, inspired in some ways by, like, you know, Trans Am culture and Dusty Rhodes or whatever. But,
I've never heard that term, Trans Am culture, but that's awesome.
it's a certain, maybe
is it,
it's
a real, is it a real thing?
Maybe it's a Southern California thing. I don't know, but okay. there is kind of a, you know, muscle car kind of guy who's.
I mean, a Trans Am culture is like Smokey and the Bandit type thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Something along those lines. Yeah. So, you know, he's got a little bit of that to him. And you know, that you could say that's a gimmick, but it's not a cat. You know, that's still a person. And so, while he plays that up for comedic effect at times, he also can be violent and brutal and do some crazy spots. But Alley Cat is kind of doing the same thing here, and then also doing, like, imitating him stuff, wearing his shirt and trying to do some of his spots. And so, like, I liked the action and I liked a lot that was going on, but again, it's like, I don't know, comedy deathmatch, comedy brawl? Like, is that what Mansoor rules are going to be? Because there's only a few people that I think he can pull that off effectively with, and Alley Cat's not one of them, because, like I said, she's a little bit too comedy and a little bit not enough brawl, you know, not enough serious.
She hasn't flushed her character out yet. She hasn't, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, like, it's not a terrible idea, because I think that Mance can pull it off. Like, I think that Mance can be the comedy deathmatch guy. You know, somehow I think he has the ability to do that. But like I said, he's not going to have many dance partners who are going to be able to do it with him. And so that really hurts the match.
Comedy deathmatch worker sounds like a very small genre.
Right. It's like, it's going to be him and that's about it. Like, I can't think of very many other guys who can pull it off. Maybe Abdullah Kobayashi can do it too. Like, when he did the deathmatch with the squid, that was pretty funny, but it also was with a squid, you know, so it's not, he wasn't actually hurting a person. But yeah, so I gave it 2.5 stars. I liked the action. I liked what they were doing, but the psychology is not there. You know, it just, and if it's supposed to just be the comedy relief match, I get that. And I probably would even grade it lighter, but because there's a lot of violence and a lot of brawling, it makes a lot of the rest of the stuff not make any sense. I mean, it's
in front of a match with a monkey in it. So it's hard to, you know,
right,
identify which one's the comedy match.
Exactly. That's a whole nother story.
I hated this match. It's a match where I like both people, and then I never want to see either of them wrestle each other again. It's horrible. I hated everything about it. At least I got to see my buddy Ben Zaney fighting in the crowd. Other than that, oh god, I don't need to watch this match. This thing, if you like both guys, don't do it to yourself. Then we get the Space Pirates versus No Consequences. I thought this was fun. It was fun enough. Felt a little long in spots. And again, I like Space Monkey. But again, he needs to be opening the show type of thing for me. He's entertaining enough. He's a good enough worker. The gimmick is fun and entertaining. But you better make it the only comedy match on the show. Or it could just, you know, get holes in the tooth. I give it 2.25. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't also give it 2.25, but I gave it 2.75. I really liked No Consequences. I thought that they had some cool double team spots, like the matching gear. I would have liked them to have just been more clearly heel, honestly. But I think that maybe they wanted this match to be kind of a showcase of just young guns and just try to get both teams over rather than worrying about that. And especially knowing that they're coming from A1, which is, Ethan Page promotion. I could definitely see, even though Ethan Page really loves, you know, fancies himself a smart psychological worker and all this, and he talks about being such a baby face or such a heel and talking people into the buildings with his promos. I could definitely also see him telling young guys like this to just go out there and try to steal the show and just try to get over and not worry about that stuff in this setting, which honestly is not the worst call. So I wouldn't even argue with it. I mean, that's what Ethan Page did before he was Mr. Look at me, I'm a body guy and I do promos. He was Monster Mafia. Let's do every fucking move in the book and try to get ourselves over with that, you know? So I can't blame him for that. Similar to Mansoor, I think Space Monkey rides that line. He does it pretty well, but he, you know, there was conversation about could Space Monkey be like a next Generico? And I think that the difference there is that Generico can be DDT champion. Generico can be PWG champion. He can be the top of the card guy because he had that wrestling acumen, and Space Monkey's not quite there. And the thing is,
Space Monkey's never proven he could have a great singles match. I mean,
Until he crosses that Rubicon, he's kind of like this jokey comedy version of an El Generico figure that I don't know if he'll ever develop into it. You know, I don't know if he'll ever actually become able to be on the top of the card kind of guy. But what he does, he does well. I mean, another guy I saw, I think it was on the Lost in New York, you know, he's in the same match, actually, I think, with the Ace of Base, Gringo Loco. But the way that he can do stuff where he's, like, eating bananas through the entire match, it's, like, it's kind of impressive, honestly. Like, as stupid as that sounds, it's, like, he works it in a way that it works. It's almost vaudevillian in a lot of ways, the way he's kind of doing pratfalls with a while he's got like a, you know, a gimmick in his hand. He's eating the banana and he's doing little stuff in between, and it works, and it works in a way that's not just wrestling funny, it's like actually funny. So like, you know, that could be his thing, but there's only so far you can go with that. I don't think even the funniest wrestler who ever wrestles, and like this is just theoretical, unless they can turn it on and have great matches in 2018, I don't think that they can be very much, honestly, other than, you know, the match before intermission or the guy who wrestles in a tag team match after Mance Warner and Alley Cat have a one-star match, according to Pete.
Yeah, garbage. And you know what? And that's the thing about indie shows. They don't draw enough kids, really, anymore. Like, Space Monkey would be a kid. That'd be such a kid-friendly gimmick, where the kids should eat them up, but you know what? There's no kids in indie shows for the most part. Well, for the most part. I don't want to say there's none. I mean, but I bet you there's more women than kids in indie shows nowadays.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the women wrestling fan population is growing, which is great in a lot of ways. But you mentioned that, and probably a good thing to do for Space Monkey that can maybe help him grow, and something that, you know, Brian Danielson has said really helped him grow as a wrestler is wrestling shows where there's a lot of kids are in England. I think that Space Monkey doing those shows, which still exist, they just don't make tape, like the camp shows. And I've seen pictures from Sarah, from the Sarah and Sarah podcast on Voices of Wrestling. I won't say which Sarah, posting pictures of herself at indie shows. A lot of times she always shows kids there, kids that she buddies up with and talks to and stuff. So there are still, I mean, and that's in Ireland, it's not in England, but still, I think that the European scene, there are still a lot of indie shows that kids go to. And I think that Space Monkey could probably do really well there and maybe even learn a little bit more about how to wrestle, like, you know, other than just kind of what he's doing now. So that might not be a bad place for him.
Sports setting we think about with some of the shtick we do. Then they went to Darby Allin versus PCO. What did you think of this match?
This was on the way to being a really great match. And wasn't it? Yeah, and I was really enjoying
it. It fell off the wayside, right? Like, they should have made that right turn, but by God, they did a left. Took a left
Yeah,
turn.
They had Destructo come out, and he's got they've got the Destructo coming out, and he's got the battery and all the kind of, you know, hysterics going on around that really broke up the flow of the match in general. And then just kind of goes into a level of camp that's a little bit much for myself personally. But what was crazy about it is that it was a good match, and not in a way that I would have predicted at all. And actually in a way that I was really interested in, because I felt like the way that Darby was being presented early made me feel kind of happy about the idea of where maybe Black Label Pro actually has foresight into like presenting Darby as credible moving forward. because I think in other places they would just have Darby kind of do this mostly as a squash and get some key spots there. I mean, something similar to like Darby's match with Walter, I think, would have been the way that I might have expected that they would have booked this.
Exactly how I was expecting it, yeah.
Yeah, but Darby looked good. He's, you know, going for Fujiwara arm bars. He's doing his chicken pecking headbutts, and he's getting some great spots off the ropes and all that. So he looked super strong to begin with, and I was really digging the match. And then, yeah, it did kind of fall apart. And even still, I mean, I gave it 3.25 star because what there was that I enjoyed. And then the stuff with the car battery and all that was relatively quick, even if it really fucked with the flow of the match for me and was just a little bit ridiculous. And then it led to the finish that I thought was done well, with a little bit of teasing, but mostly just dominant PCO finish, which I thought was a good way to finish it off after that. So so yeah, I thought good match that probably could have ended up being great. And honestly, like, I think, weirdly, like I just mentioned, Darby versus Walter in Evolve, I think that if this was in a company that maybe had a little bit more foresight and a little bit more planning over their matches, it probably could have been, these guys can probably have a great match if it was in like an Evolve or somewhere where they're putting effort into like actually talking to guys about not doing silly stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. That thing, the Deathstroke coming out, it was like, no. And with the car battery, that's a gimmick where it should never be presented in the match itself. And they actually flung Dexter out, which is just, you know, and he got a booking fee, I'm assuming, too.
Yes, please.
There's a waste of so you paid somebody and flew him out, probably, or whatever. But you probably, I guarantee you got paid to help hurt your show. So that's not a good thing. But I'm with you on everything. I gave it 3.25 also. But yeah, I was on the verge of doing some really good stuff. It just went off a cliff. I don't know if the crowd, I know the online community loves Destro, so who knows if it got over live. Because the crowd doesn't seem all that lively anyway. And it might be because they're seeing good stuff and then bad stuff. And the show doesn't flow real well, even though you're having good stuff at times. And then I know they went to intermission here. And then they came up with the production versus General Order 24, which I thought was a really fun brawl. I give it 3 stars, but I was like kind of floored that they came back after the PCO Darby Allin with this. Coming back from break, and they run this wild brawl all over the building, and it was a really, but you know what? I think this was the best use of these guys, because I don't think any of these guys would be considered super workers. So having them beat the crap out of each other around the arena, I thought it worked for me. What about you?
It's tough for me. I think I can agree with some of what you're saying there, and I think that the production is, if not just a little bit weird for me, that they've kind of gone off the deep end with what their gimmick is. They can still be pretty good, but like, I think that without a doubt, Marcus Crane is my least favorite wrestler wrestling in 2018. Like, I can't fucking stand him. I don't know why. Something about the stuff that he does and the way that he looks and just everything about him, I just can't fucking stand the guy. So it really hurts basically any of his matches, because I don't like any of his offense. I think everything he does is stupid. He's the kind of guy that snorts a line of cocaine in the middle of the match with a known Nazi, at least, sympathizer. So it does make it hard for me to get behind him even as a person. I'm just like, God, you know, he just, a lot of the stuff he does looks insanely sloppy. He's got a terrible look. I think that, you know, maybe people could say it works because it's scuzzy and sleazebaggy or whatever, but he's not even, I don't know, there's kind of a good sleazebag, and then there's, you know, to me, what he is, which is just like, he's just kind of there and just annoying. So that hurts.
It's like every, like, drug dealer on a street corner you've ever seen.
Basically, yeah. So that really hurts the match. But I did like stuff like Eric Ryan really just using Crane as a weapon. I like that kind of dynamic of the team, because it almost plays into my dislike for him. Even his tag team partner doesn't like him. So I can buy into that, you know, that psychology. Like I said, that said, I mean, for a brawl, and like you said, the best that you can get out of these guys, probably, I mean, you're probably right.
And, you know, you didn't have a lot of crowd brawling and stuff. You had a little bit of brawling on the stage and stuff earlier, but not really out into the crowd off the bleachers and all that. So, you know, at least it had that to make it feel special. But, I mean, where, like you said, where's the semblance of any kind of fucking build or what's going on with this show? Why is this match here? Why is this happening here? Why is why is any of this stuff happening? You know, it's just so much randomness. So,
that should have been built. Maybe it was, and I'm not following the promotion enough, but it feels like this is something that should have been built up to for a few months.
No, because I don't think that the production guys have really been in Black Label Pro before, so I don't think it was built to really at all.
Okay.
Maybe it was, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
They were there before, but they were just like in random matches. I think that there's just been kind of issues. Because I remember not the last time, but a while back we saw the front 246 or 242, whatever they're called, the Final Order 28 or something. 24. General Order 24. That's their name. Which does sound like something you would order at an Asian restaurant.
We're
getting attacked by like No New Friends and stuff. So I don't even fucking know if there's any build or anything to this. But it should have been. It should have felt more important. And the commentary should have at least put it over that there's some background to why these guys are all trying to kill each other. Right? Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. 2.5 stars.
We even had, what's his name? What was the one announcer? Do you remember his name?
Dave Prazak?
Yeah, he even said he hasn't been watching much men's wrestling and has limited knowledge on the product, right?
Yeah, which is great. What I want to hear from a commentator.
Off the bat, I'm like, okay. And I like Prazak, but you could tell he's a polished announcer who didn't know much about what the fuck was going on. If you're going to bring somebody in for commentary, you better fucking break down the stuff for him and not expect him to know everything.
Or have a guy with him who can help carry him.
Not everyone has a background of watching everything like Dylan Hales and stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah, and Prazak, I mean, he's done an AAW show here and there within the past couple of years and stuff, and he kind of almost always just openly says that. Like, I don't really pay attention to a lot of wrestling other than, you know, obviously Shimmer is the one that he runs. And women's wrestling in general, because obviously he's a professional. So he has to keep up on all women's wrestling to know who he might want in Shimmer. But he always just kind of openly say that. And so, you have to have his partner be someone who can help carry that part of it for him.
And here they were just doing the random whoever worked that night gimmick. So
yeah, exactly.
Or he was flying solo at times. So there you go. What do you think of Josh Briggs versus Kobe Durst?
Kobe is getting really good. I think that he could like start to break out here pretty soon as someone who people start talking about as being good. Just like great wrestling, great selling, not really selling, but a different kind of selling in this match where he was selling the feat that he's like going up against a guy so much bigger than him. I thought, you know, fighting from underneath kind of selling, but not necessarily even just like that he's getting beat up. Although he did sell the strikes and the spots from Briggs in a way that really helped add credibility to Briggs, which, you know, Briggs has naturally because of his size. But I've also seen Briggs in settings where even though he's got that size, all of his offense looks like shit because the guy he's going against doesn't sell it to really put it over that it's more impactful because of his size. So like, you know, that really helped. There's a lot of that from Kobe that really helped. But also, like I said, Kobe fighting from underneath, not just giving up, really coming across like, and you know, this is gonna sound bad, but almost kind of in a lot of ways coming across like a you know, dollar store version of Ilya Dragunov against Walter or something, where he's got that kind of, you know, unbreakable spirit. So I really liked that action. Briggs, this is probably one of the best showings I've seen from Briggs because he didn't try anything too ridiculous, and the guy that, like I said, the guy he's going against actually sold for him. Because I've seen him in other places where his offense looks weak. The people who he's going against don't sell for him. They don't get up for his spots as well. And it kind of can make his stuff look awkward. He also cut back on, there wasn't any big strike exchanges. It was really, it would be Durst maybe hitting two or three forearms or charging forearms. And then Briggs hitting one big forearm that just gets sold, which gives it not a chance to expose him by throwing too many in a row that don't look good. So yeah, I thought that Durst did a really good job here. I loved the pile driver and, you know, the cliche spot of looking at the referee in desperation. I can't believe he kicked out. But, I mean, I felt like Durst really sold that well off the pile driver so much that I bought into it. The look on his face really felt like, what the fuck do I got to do? And, yeah, so really good showing from Briggs. Still not a great match because it was, like I said, it was kind of, you might even say idiot-proofed. But I think that that's a credit to someone like Briggs, who's relatively young and going against someone who's, you know, very green, obviously, who's I've seen go up against guys who are a lot more experienced than Durst and have much worse matches. So I got to give Durst a lot of credit on that. I did like the end up finish. He does get the pile driver again and gets the win, continues to sell his ass off and feels like a guy that they can move forward with, at least in this company, the way that they're presenting Durst. So for me, I thought, you know, good stuff all around. I gave it 3.5 stars. Liked both guys, like I said, but primarily I thought that Briggs looked good because of Durst.
Yeah, I give it 3 stars. And I thought Briggs has a good look. I really liked the opening sequence. They really established the big guy versus the little guy dynamic. And so they're telling that story right off the bat from Jump Street. So I really like that. And it always works. I mean, you've just got to be a terrible worker not to be able to get a big man versus little man match over. Love the swing in Alabama Slam by Briggs. I thought that was awesome looking. But you're right. Durst was the key here, selling. And really had some dynamic selling. And you don't see that that much anymore, where you guys just are just dying for a pleasure in a good way and making comebacks. And, yeah, I'm with you. I really dug it. 3 stars. D'Lo versus Joey Janela. Again, I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the shtick here. Then we see him out brawling. You know, it was a little bit of everything out there, and ended up being fun stuff because, you know what? People always like D'Lo, and Joey Janela is a blast. So that's what we got here. We got just a little fun, really strong shotgun Saturday night match here. And I gave it 3 stars. I really dug it. In a good way. I mean, it's just, you know, it was fun, you know. We had some cool spots from D'Lo, that some of his traditional stuff. You had Janela being Janela, which is, you know, that's a positive. And the man just loves his old school, older wrestling. And he was just having a blast. And I'd much prefer Joey Janela here going 14 minutes or 12 minutes than 40-something against Great Sasuke. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah. I'm with you. I think I was just about to be like, I think Janela can make anything work, and I completely forgot about that Sasuke match. So, but he really does. I mean, Joey Janela does know how to make the most out of the least. He does a really good job of that. I guess with the Sasuke match, he did kind of. The Sasuke match was pretty quick, actually, wasn't it? It was the recent one, Escape from New York with God damn it, why can't I think of his name?
WrestleMania week, where it went like 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm thinking of the Escape from New York match, which I think, actually, I liked. The Sasuke match, that was it, because you were there live, right?
Yes.
Okay, and I think on tape, something was fucked up, or they intentionally edited it, because when I watched it on tape, it felt like it was cut. It was, like, clipped.
Probably just people walking out and booing it at the same time, yeah, and it was, again, you know, this is at 3:30 in the fucking morning when we're watching this shit.
Right. So yeah, I mean, Janela can make almost anything work. He is able to, work super well with D'Lo, get him over. D'Lo looks fine for what the spots that he's hitting. Janela is able, he's selling. And then, like you said, it's like a shotgun Saturday night match. But Janela is able to, with his charisma and his overness, he's able to have the main event on your indie show be a shotgun Saturday night match, and it doesn't feel disappointing, I don't think, for the crowd. They still feel like they got their show, they got their main event, they saw their bells and whistles with the nostalgic act and Janela. So, I mean, yeah, I'm with you. 3 stars. I mean, done to, the peak perfection for what it could be with D'Lo Brown in 2018 in, some Black Label Pro show, Janela. Janela, he's a pig in shit when he's doing stuff like this, and it's so funny because I could care less about, nostalgia D'Lo Brown matches, but he's able to make it work.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's like, he does a great worker. I mean, I don't think he'll ever get signed to NXT because he doesn't have the body or the size or what have you. But he'll be, I think he'll be an indie star who can make money big time. So
yeah, it's interesting. But
you never know. The tide changes. Maybe he will get brought in. I mean, I don't want to say it never would happen, but he doesn't strike me as the NXT type either, though.
No, but I mean, that's the thing. Even with the edict that came down, right, that WWE is looking to sign anybody who's a game changer, right? Which I thought was, when I heard it put that way, I thought was so interesting because of, you know, obviously game changer wrestling. And who knows? I mean, with that, I mean, he kind of is. He's really standing out with what he's able to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't just sign him just because of that, if that's the real stand. But I guess that does come down to his, if he wants to do it or not. He does in some ways come across like a guy who just wouldn't. I think that Penny Ford,
that guy, would rather be a big fish in a small pond than be a big fish in a big pond. Or a small fish in a big pond, or, you know, where even though he'd be a bigger star, it wouldn't matter because he wouldn't have as much creative control, and he definitely wouldn't be being able to work Sergeant Slaughter or D'Lo Brown on a weekend or what have you.
Right, exactly. Well, I think if him getting in there got Penelope Ford into NXT, though, I think that she could actually get over really well there. So,
I agree.
Or if she ends up there even on her own. But, you know, I mean, yeah, because it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Because she could fit right in. I mean, she's got the look and she can, you know, bump and get over. So it's really interesting to think about because, yeah, I mean, Janela, he's a game changer. I mean, you know, pun kind of intended there. He's the guy who's making, you know, Dylan Hayes' promotion of the year pop as the promotion of the year, right? I mean,
yeah.
So.
Very true. I mean, I have to give this show a thumbs in the middle. It just had a lot of, just, you know, there's just some, you know, head-scratching moments, some good matches. Definitely, I think it would have definitely benefited from being laid out differently, the matches, as in, like, you know, match order. What about you? What were your thoughts? I mean, I give it a thumbs in the middle, but I think it could have been a thumbs up show if they would have, you know, cut a match here, and changed up the match order a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's definitely there was something here, but the show was not presented well. The opener, I think I got what they were maybe going for with the opener, but I think when the three-way opener kind of shit the bed for me. It really brings down the rest of the show in a lot of ways.
Is this the second or third one we reviewed?
I mean, we've reviewed other Black Label Pro shows from before. Maybe third.
I thought this was at least our second, maybe our third.
Yeah, I think it's the third, actually.
It all comes down to, like, head-scratching moments and how the card is structured, right? For the most part.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, because you know what? I think if I remember, we reviewed a show that had PCO versus Ethan Page, which was kind of before the whole PCO thing had gone completely crazy. And then we also reviewed when Jordan Grace won the title and then this. So that's at least three shows. There might have been another one in there that I'm forgetting, which might have been Ethan Page versus Manny Fernandez.
He did not do that one,
Okay. I've just watched that one on my own because I'm a sadomasochist. But yeah, there is a lot of head-scratching moments. There's a lot of interesting stuff, but I think that people, some bookers maybe, are getting a little bit too comfortable where they think that you can throw anything together and the guys are just going to make it work, and we're not there anymore because a lot of the top talent on the indies have gotten kind of siphoned off. And you're not to say that people are bad, but for, you know, for every Matt Riddle that gets signed, you're not really replacing him with, I mean, luckily, in that case, you actually have the example, which was the Tom Lawler, but that's not the case in every time. I mean, who's the Keith Lee? You know, there's not another Keith Lee. Just because Josh Briggs is tall doesn't make him as good as Keith Lee, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of the place that they're at, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, on that note, Tim, anything you want to mention before we head out?
No, just seems that there's some exciting stuff going on behind the scenes, so I'm excited for that to all roll out, and then otherwise, just follow me on Twitter @LuchaUndead.
Yep, I echo what Tim said. Follow me at Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Hit me up on Wednesdays at WorldCast Wednesdays for your World Class Championship Wrestling review. Keep on watching the wrestling. All in, all out. It doesn't matter. Just as long as you find something you like to watch. We'll catch you later.
West Coast team.